Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle.
There was a site where
please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features.
Collective at a very well-equipped, well-suited training site, and that there was a lot of early development, but some tragic events that prevented it from happening amongst those people at that site. And I'll spare you the details, but the idea really didn't go very far back then, about 10 years ago, 2012, 2013. My life shifted dramatically, and I was in my own sort of spiritual war zone for many years. I couldn't really be of service as I was dealing with some trauma healing and whatnot, as we do, as you do, as a permaculture designer and as a tactician, if you will, a warrior, if you will. But now that I'm in the place I'm at now, where I have my own site, and it's very conducive to rebuilding this tactical permaculture concept with a lot of practical means to develop it, it actually has come full circle. And that's why we're on episode 132 right now, because I dusted it off and I realized recently it's worth honoring these roots of this concept for me, because I really was able to trace it back, and I realized that sometimes like with anything, we all have moments where we question ourselves, we have crises of confidence, and we wonder if what we're doing is the right path or making any sense or ever going to be taken seriously or honored or respected by others. Are you just in your own world trying to assert something that is either ahead of its time or behind its time or whatever? And sometimes I wonder about this as my path, as my destiny. And then something came to me, a very powerful insight, which is that the fact that I own the land that I'm doing this project on right now, and the fact that I'm free financially enough to be essentially retired early, and I haven't had to work for the man, as it were, or even work for permaculture crews that I loved working for over many years. I've been able to 100% dedicate all of my time to my own self-care, my own self-healing, my own land, my own survival, my own permaculture survival. And the time that it's either too hot to work or too cold to work, or well, it's never too cold to work for me out here, but working heat warms me up. But a lot of this development has occurred after hard days of work, as far as the website and the show and the tool building and whatnot. But yeah, when I can't be outside working and I have to be sheltered, then I often have been working on this website and working on developing this concept. But I would not have the land and the freedom, I would not have been able to afford it, if it was not for the fact that I didn't give up on the tactical permaculture concept after that site failed me. And it was, there was mutual things, so I don't want to be bitter about it, but I will say that that project site did not pan out. But I didn't give up on the idea, and there was technically one meetup that I facilitated. It probably was the last meetup that I did under the meetup group that had been the main group that was formed to do projects up on that land site that fell apart for me. But I held on to the meetup group, and I did one final meetup. I'm pretty sure it's the last one. It narratively speaking, cinematically or dramatically speaking, for this to be the last one that sort of planted the seed, if you will, of tactical permaculture to survive or to be dormant, that seed actually grew and led to things. So what happened was, what's so pivotal, what's so interesting is that because I did that one meetup, even though I had no site, it was in a public park because the land site that I had been developing and working on for over a year, that fell through. But I did this meetup, and I decided to make a sort of research primer and give an outline of the concept of tactical permaculture, the way I was framing it, and to put together some pop culture and some sort of some ancient historical references to build out this conceptual framework of kind of interweaving horticulture with combat and self-defense at all scales, all warriors throughout time and warrior archetypes in modern media and whatnot, to sort of build up that more obviously tactical sensibility and to find the people who already have that sensibility. So it's for people who are permaculturists who are weak on security and security professionals who are weak on permaculture, if you will. So I'm going to share with you, because I found these documents, the most original musings on this topic going back to, first I'm going to start with, this was just the first, going back a little bit further. So yeah, the idea started to take place at that land site, and before that fell apart for me, and I did that meetup solo, when we had our little crew and we had the land, we made this commitment as we started to develop it kind of privately. The public offering was going to be to start doing these meetups where we offer different trainings and whatnot. So this is the very first original prototype of a list of potential offerings that we were going to start doing on that land. And this goes back to, it was late 2012, early 2013. So this actually was a sort of a side note or a future kind of advertisement within a different meetup theme. So I'm going to start reading this right now. Join us for an epic multi-heap thermophilic composting workshop. We've literally got tons of leaf litter, wood chip mulch, chicken manure, horse manure, ash, and other ingredients. We'll be collaboratively designing and experimenting with some mechanical engineering innovations that build ergonomic human workouts into the process of turning the compost. Why burn off calories in the gym and be an ecological heat sink when you can reinvest your hard-earned caloric energy into productive food systems with exponential caloric returns? You've heard of jungle gyms? How about food forest gyms that also build in self-defense training in the farm chore circuit? Many martial arts began with the adaptation of farm tools into defensive implements by peasant farmers who were under constant attack by feudal warlords. Over the course of the next several months, we'll be setting up a tactical permaculture laboratory. Some projects will include a Wing Chun dummy analog fashioned out of a cylinder that spins compost inside when you work the forms. A system of containers that are lifted and dumped by pulleys and rope with a bar that gives you dynamic resistance training. Practicing the Jeet Kune Do lunging sidekick on hanging pumpkins. Practicing cover and concealment with kitchen scrap food fights. Practicing fencing and boxing footwork by mixing cob. Practicing tiger claw kung fu by reaching in and out of hot compost, carving dumbbells out of logs, brisk uphill foraging hikes on soft earth instead of jogging on hard sidewalks, stretching by harvesting ground cover crops, pushing wheelbarrows to build strength and endurance, sowing seeds with projectile implements, bringing back the pea shooter, seed ball throwing for accuracy training, bicycle-powered blenders, washing machines, compost turners, irrigation pumps, you get the idea. There's so much soil that needs to be rehabilitated, so many gardens that need to be planted, so many sustainable structures that need to be built. Why not tear up that gym membership and make that boot camp workout more like the Army Corps of Engineers? In the world I see, public parks provide a food forest, a nursery, emergency supplies, grain silos, water tanks, functional and educational playgrounds, tool and equipment lending libraries, an organic resource recycling center that makes compost and mulch from neighborhood collections, tactical training, dojos, etc. The prime directive of permaculture is, quote, "The only ethical decision is to take responsibility for our own existence and that of our children," end quote, by Bill Mollison. An often overlooked dimension of taking responsibility for our own existence is taking responsibility for our physical security towards a society of peaceful ecological warriors. Okay, so that was the vision in the earliest of days. And a lot of that stuff, wow, I'm like, I even forgot that I forgot that we talked about that, or that I came up with it. I was definitely spearheading the project. But yeah, the other folks were providing the land, and another individual was an actual professional combat tactical trainer with just the works, all every type of legal firearm, every type of situation, scenario, vehicle, shoot house, everything. So we were going to mainly do airsoft. So this gives me a reference point to where, yeah, before I die, I want to have really at least experimented with and gave a fair chance at all of these different ideas. Some of them are coming along already. But yeah, that was the first sort of sounding that, raising that flag to try to form some interest around these topics. And then that land project, as far as my involvement in it, it kind of fell apart. And what happened next was this me having this meetup where I did a bit of research, and I went further into some of the themes that were touched on in what I just read right there. So this is more of an outline for a workshop where I would just touch on these bullet points, and I'll see if, to the best of my ability, I can at least kind of explain some of the logic moving along with these references that I made here. They're obviously rusty, so bear with me. But after I finish reading this original meetup outline, I'm going to explain how the course of events unfolded, so that having held onto the idea and done this workshop meetup, that actually led to me having a micro fortune years later that I could actually afford to do this for real, for this to be my thing at this point. Could not have happened, would not have happened, but for this meetup. So I'm going to honor it right now by reading it and going through it. And there was maybe 3 to 5 people there, and it was probably a free or sliding scale. Maybe I made $5 or $10. Cost me nothing but a little bit of time. Maybe I earned a few dollars from doing it, and then that seed grew, and it turned into, I'm not going to say the figures exactly, but a micro fortune enough to buy me 5 years so far out of having to work, and 5 years and a piece of land and a nice 3/4 ton truck and the works. I mean, way more than I could have ever dreamed of, way more than I thought that the idea of tactical permaculture would lead to. It's a circuitous route, but we'll get to that in a minute. So here we go. Okay, so I'm just going to give a brief overview of the contents of this meetup. I did some reading of excerpts from Ancient Origins of Wing Chun, The Legend of Wing Chun. These are interwoven with the history of the Shaolin Temple and the development of Kung Fu in China. Yeah, it's interesting, the reference here to the legend of the origins of Wing Chun. I recommend looking into it. I'm not going to read this entire excerpt here, but I will get into some of the quotes that I pulled from Karate Kid Part 2. It says, the villain Sato is hell-bent on forcing Miyagi into mortal combat to restore Sato's honor from a love triangle feud spanning decades. The most extreme measure he begins to bulldoze Miyagi's Okinawan village. He sold the land to developers as a tactic to pressure Miyagi into mortal combat. Daniel-san says, forget about the honor garbage. Miyagi says, have nothing to do with honor garbage, just have to do with village survival. So my narrative on that is that all of our ancestors fought to defend their villages, and ultimately, due to what Jared Diamond attributes to superior lethality with guns, germs, and steel, the conquistadors and imperialists have succeeded in civilizing or making into cities most of the villages in the world. Bill Mollison, the co-founder of permaculture, is not very proud of humanity's creation of cities. In fact, he states that, quote, a city like New York has only one product. It's garbage and feces. And if we sit here, we can see barge load after barge load of fertilizer proceeding to be dumped at sea. And if it was returned to its source and used on the land to produce food for New York, then there would be no pollution. But when we dump it at sea, it wipes out 700 square miles of ocean per year. ... We've built nothing so unsustainable as cities. We can only remedy this if we produce the food consumed by the cities in the cities, end quote. So, and then the permaculture prime directive, the only ethical decision is to take responsibility for our own existence and that of our children. Can't repeat that enough. And then a section on talking about the permaculture designer's manual, who was aware of it, a list of the basic survival needs: shelter, water, food, energy, security, sanitation, medicine, communications, and then a little exercise: who supplies these needs to us now, where do they come from. It's a sort of interactive piece of the workshop. And then applying permaculture zonation theory to the geography of your emergency supplies, orders of size, most to least proximity, use and access, fractal scaling up of the same pattern. What do you have in your body? Who's got EDC? Your bug out bag? Who's got a bug out bag? Who has preps in their vehicle? Who has preps at their work and their school? Who's got emergency kits and plans? Who's got a bug out location? So those were the sort of interactive ways to frame these zones that I've worked out in terms of zones of preparedness, similar to the permaculture usage zones. Another exercise: take a few minutes to write down some action items to start filling out your preparedness zones. So yeah, fill in the gaps and preps based on that outline above. Water in the landscape and survival rule of threes. Who knows the survival rule of threes? Designing to constants. Sepp Holzer in Austria. Jeff Lawton talking about LA lakes Focus on Food. Quail Springs, restoring watersheds. Brad Lancaster, sponges on the landscape, harvesting rainwater.com. Art Ludwig, gray water activists, oasis design, gorilla garden, gorilla gray water girls, gray water action, Mollison, forests or lakes. So those are just things that I mention about ways that we can get more tactical about survival with water in the landscape. Questions are: what are some water sources in the home? What water sources in the urban landscape? What are some places in the city that could be earthwork to increase productivity of water? Okay, next headline is regenerative approach to survival food storage. What's on the market in the survival food industry? And that is, fortunately, my side narrative here is that my idea is there's a lot of stuff that's really not that healthy and really not that sustainable. I do this demo of the sprout kit design that I built as a method for survival sprouting. And then here we get into precedents for redesigning the urban commons to enhance ecology and community resilience. So beyond community garden condos, that's just questioning that framework so we get more of an integrated food forestry. With that, we've got Mark Lakeman, Communitecture and City Repair, the first public food forest, 7 acres, groundbreaking, 2012, largest in the U.S. That was a note on that. Margaret Harrison, lead landscape architect for the Beacon Food Forest Project. So just who gets to harvest all that low-hanging fruit when the time comes? Quote, anyone and everyone, says Harrison. There was a major discussion about it. People worried, what if someone comes and takes all the blueberries? That could very well happen. But maybe someone needed those blueberries. We look at it this way. If we all have none at the end of blueberry season, then it means we're successful. Okay, that was just a quote. Talk about the politics of growing food in public spaces. Then we have a reference to the historical Victory Gardens, which was part of the war effort. Then we have a reference to Cuba. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1990, Cuba's economy went into a tailspin, with imports of oil cut by more than half and food by 80%. People were desperate. Cubans share how they transitioned from a highly mechanized industrial agriculture system to one using organic methods of farming and local urban gardens. And then there was the Permaculture Award given to by the White House in the Obama administration for a sustainability award for, I believe, the UMass Amherst kitchen garden that they built to supply, installed and built and designed to supply their cafeteria. Can't remember what year that was. And then we have networking with local disaster preparedness community agencies and organizations, institutions to promote permaculture-based solutions. We have community emergency response training. We have Citizen Corps, Neighborhood Watch, Neighborhood Council, Neighborhood Watch, schools, colleges, faith groups, Warren Brush's design of the Amma Temple, references to prison gardens here. Nelson Mandela may have started it all when he was in prison. Quote, a garden is one of the few things in prison that one can control, he wrote in his autobiography. Being a custodian of this patch of earth offered a small taste of freedom. End quote. Okay, guarding the garden, case studies in tactical permaculture. I got a list here. So Karate Kid 2, the reference I made above, the history of the fortification of settlements, the stories of community gardens and cities being defended from drug addicts and thieves and other types of trespassing by growing a perimeter of prickly pear cacti. We have just the looming threat of people subsisting on the edges and fringes of society. How do you build systems that make allies out of threats out there, mainly in the homeless community, which I've been a part of? Kind of editing a couple things here because I go along. It's been quite a while. The South Central Farm, which is a story unto itself. I've mentioned it before. Please, there's a documentary film called The Garden, I believe, which is a great introduction to that whole legacy. But that taught me a lot and was an application of me and my collectives at the time. We applied ourselves to occupy the South Central Farm and be a part of that urban ecological resistance movement. You have Ron Finley, the guerrilla gardener in South Central. Quote from him, you ain't gangster unless you have a garden, says Ron Finley. You gotta flip the script. There was a time when Snoop Lion, a.k.a. Snoop Dogg, announced this something called the Mind Gardens Project, giving back to Jamaica, to doing gardening work in Jamaica with organic community gardens in that country. Then Warren Brush, one of my most looked up to mentors, telling stories of working with child soldiers in Liberia. And then study of the historical martial arts weapons, Tanfa from Okinawa, then the police baton, the sai and a pitchfork, make a reference to Ewoks as the archetype of indigenous resistance from Star Wars. Then we have this first world example, Fernando Aguirre, at the time, 31-year-old, lives in Buenos Aires, Argentina. This is from his bio. With his wife and two children, he started writing about urban survivalism after experiencing firsthand the socioeconomic collapse of his country in 2001. The everyday experience of living in Argentina after the collapse provides Fernando a wealth of experience that he shares with his readers through his blog and his book. Fernando is the author of Surviving the Economic Collapse, which has been an emergency and disaster bestseller since its release in 2009. He brings a voice of realism to this topic of economic collapse. Okay, so that was the outline. It was a little tedious. Thank you for bearing with me, but that was my sort of my thesis, if you will, and I'm here to defend it to this day. Yeah, no pun intended. We'll do the tactical defense of this thesis of tactical permaculture. But the idea was, I mean, this is not comprehensive, and certainly, yeah, ultimately, yeah, before I die, if I stay with this, I will continue to develop these concepts and extend the research, because I think all of this, it's really absurd that it's so disintegrated. It's, to me, it's absurd that people are not trained to defend themselves and people aren't responsible for growing any, if not all, of their own food. That leaves us pretty weak and defenseless and helpless. We don't know how to sustain our biological existence, and even if we did, we wouldn't know how to defend our bodies or our lands. So we're just about as useless as civilians as you can possibly get. And then the warriors aren't that much better off, because they're not, except for the ones who come from a farming background. You think about the industrialization of agriculture. That means that even if most of the military volunteers, those enlisted folks, I don't know if it's still true, but it certainly was historically true that a lot of people in the military, they were good with tractors, they were good with the outdoors, because they were farm boys. And that was the legacy. So there was a much closer connection between hunting, living off the land, defending the farm, having tactical wherewithal. Being in the bush, those skill sets of rural Americana obviously flowed into the battlefield. But now we're so far from that. Even enlisted folks who do grow up on farms, they have a totally different skill set, which is not the same ruggedness as their ancestors. They are operating a lot more machines and at a higher scale, if they're even around, because the aging farming population is not being replaced by their own children. They're going to the cities, and farms are being sold off, and it's big chem ag that's taking over all that. So our work's cut out for us here. Now, with that said, I mean, that gives you some food for thought. Again, apologize for kind of going over this now. It's not as fresh in my mind. So let's move along and just take that moment for me to acknowledge, okay, this is interesting. I was, as a martial artist, not a soldier, but as a martial artist and an eco-warrior, this was the beginning of my synthesis of these ideas of how do we work our way back to the land and then be able to defend it once we get ourselves back there. Because once we get away from the comfort of the city establishment for security, we start having to take responsibility for our physical security on the land. That's what I'm doing right now in this very moment. How did this this very humble and very B-grade research project of mine and a little meetup group, how did that turn into a micro fortune? Well, here's the interesting part of the story. And what happened was, one of the people who attended that workshop was very intrigued by my presentation and wanted to asked me if I would find a synergistic sort of partnership with her offer to have me do a hands-on permaculture meetup as a follow-up to this on her property nearby, which was a very sophisticated homestead, way more advanced and developed than a lot of the stuff that I'd done. I was very humbled by what she'd already done. I felt like I didn't have much to offer at that point, but she was very happy to invite me to bring the meetup membership, to have the opportunity to do a walkthrough and a basically intro permaculture design session. Not so much focused on the tactical, but just she was interested in permaculture proper, hadn't had much formal training, was interested in the topic, and said, let's, you know, if you'd like to, you can host, I'll host one of your meetups at my place, and we can kind of do a design, a refresh, and then continue to have workshops thereafter. So we booked that, and it was at that workshop where we did some basic sort of intro permaculture stuff. We walked the site, we took notes, we made observations, we understood what was already going there, and thought about ways we could interconnect existing site elements and whatnot. And I ended up doing a lot of great work and partnership with other additional activities. We did some sheet mulching, we installed gardens, we did all kinds of stuff to help that site. And it was great for me to have a place to continue the craft after I was effectively lost that ideal property I had been working on as a landless peasant sort of sharecropper up to that point. They were very hospitable. I didn't live there or stay there, but I was grateful to be able to do some projects there. So at that first meetup that we did there, that's where I met a fellow who decided he wanted to hire me to consult with and to do design, build, permaculture, survivalism projects for him. And he ended up being, I'm not going to give away too many details. Obviously, in the tactical sense, it's a need to know. You don't need to know too much. And so I'm going to keep it very, very vague. But it was fortuitous and auspicious for me and him to become friends, and for him to, in the process of him hiring me, for us to become very good friends, and for us to develop a lot of respect and camaraderie for and with each other, really commiserating on the need for a more tactical and survival edge on gardening and homesteading and permaculture. We were very much on the same page with the more effort and energy and time and resources I put into making myself into a target, the more I want to bolster my defenses along the way. So we were very on the same page with that. And it just so happened that although I was very stubborn and ignorant and in a scarcity mindset about, shall we say, technology investment potential opportunities, and it was took a long time for me to finally wake up and smell the coffee of what he was trying to turn me on to. If I had taken his advice when he started to give it to me, I would be, it wouldn't be a micro fortune, it would be a macro fortune that I would have right now. So if you know what I'm referring to in terms of a missed opportunity, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm just not even going to drop the name right now, but I will say, you know, better late than never. And yes, I finally got the wherewithal to be open-minded, to listen to him and take his advice in an area that was foreign to me. I never thought investing in anything was possible for someone in my income range, which was always been homeless, car dwelling, shacking up, barely having pennies to rub together to pay a phone bill. And that's been the story of my whole life, just whatever you want to call it, a starving artist, someone who doesn't fit in, a dropout, you know, you could call me all that. But it was way beyond my event horizon to imagine that I could invest with what I had. What, quit smoking and quit drinking and put that money towards some kind of investment fund. I also was very ethical. I wouldn't want to buy into the typical growth stocks du jour, certainly not a lot of the tech stocks at the time. So it took a lot to meet my minimum ethical requirements to even want to invest in anything. But without telling that whole story, let's get 10 years into the future and say, yeah, about midway in between doing these workshops and where I am right now, I got on board. I made some important pivotal trades that I never thought I would be able to do. And I was able to seriously profit from some trades that made it so here I am It took me 5 years to get serious about it. Once I got serious, it took me a couple years to get to a point where I got financially free, and Tactical Permaculture bought me my land and bought me my freedom. Several acres of land, up to now 5 years of freedom, and I didn't sell at all what I traded into. I still have some of it left, nowhere near as much as I would like to. I've had to burn it away and sell it off, and sometimes at good prices, sometimes at bad prices, sometimes very high. But at least for me, it's all been profit. I've never sold below my entry point. It's always been in the green as far as the profit goes. Just hasn't been as much profit as I would like. So I've been, at least it did not spoil me. I don't know who I would be, where I would be, how my personality would be distorted by excessive wealth, but having the micro fortune has kept me humble, down to earth, and pretty much on a razor's edge of survival, just to preserve that future nest egg for the hope that it could be worth more in the future, but at the very least it won't be worth too much less, so I can continue to draw from it. Although it feels like cannibalism, I would like to leave it alone, and I would like for this project to actually pay for itself. That's why I do want to put out a request. I will say, hey, if you've got less than I do, then believe me, I don't want to ask you for anything. If you've got more than I do, a lot more than I do, and you think anything I'm talking about is worthwhile, I don't do this often, probably, maybe you've never done it before, but I will say right now, you know, looking at current events, looking at the state of the world, looking at how much of that micro fortune I have left to do this, it's kind of scary. And I do feel like this is a great opportunity where I'm at now, the location that I'm at. There's so many dimensions of it that are conducive to all the stuff I'm talking about. So if you think this is important and you think that I should be out here, even if it's just me by myself, continuing this research project of building a laboratory and testing these things, so that if I can be successful, well, both my successes and my failures, if I fail at something, you'll get to learn about it, and you'll get to avoid that mistake based on me learning the hard way instead of you. Or if I'm successful at something, you can implement that just as well. If this site is meant to be more of a group project where I get back to where we started with having different subject matter experts come and do various forms of legitimate professional tactical training that I'm not skilled enough or trained enough to do, I can be the host, I can provide hospitality, and I can teach what I'm able to teach and also bring in subject matter experts the way I've done in the past. And I brought together, I mean, I did what was called the Permaculture and Preparedness Meetup. And one time we had this sort of biblical tableau, if you will, of all of the heads of the various survival meetup groups in LA County. We had a meeting at that land that I was at. That was actually the meeting that brought the tactical training professional to our site. And our side conversation was really how this was born. So this is so interesting even to remember that. It was the synthesis of my reaching out and building alliances within the prepper survivalist meetup community of Southern California, which there were several flagship meetups at the time in 2012. Bringing them together, we had this tableau meal, this feast at our property where we talked shop. We talked about some of the folks being ex-military, what they're doing with their survival and preparedness meetup groups, what we wanted to do on the land, how we wanted to facilitate tactical training. And that was, again, where one of those folks said, hey, I'm sold. I'm moving in. He moved on the land. We started to get him situated. We started talking about the design of the land, what to build into it, and then that all fell apart. Man, I would love for that fellow to come out of the woodwork someday and really, if he still has any faith and hope in my character. I mean, I believe I was able to sustain our mutual respect and friendship. But man, if he's out there, if you know who you are, because you're listening to this and you're out there, man, let's get back to work, because I miss you, and it was a damn shame the way it went down. It was a damn shame. And I'm sorry that things went down the way they did. I had to do what I had to do to preserve my honor. And who knows, maybe someday he'll be here and we will do a show together and we will tell that story and we will do it in a way that's very honorable towards all involved. But man, if it's not him, it's going to be somebody else, because I need that archetype in my life. I need that archetype here. I need people who understand security and who don't joke about paranoia. They don't joke about, because they've been through situations where they've experienced what happens when you're complacent and you get compromised, because you either convince yourself or other people convince you that there's nothing to worry about. If that's your mentality, then this is not for you. If it is your mentality that security matters, then maybe this is for you. Cheers.